is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going to space because a mission underway, a magical possibility. The mission is called Lucy. And in the initial report, there was trouble on board Lucy with a solar panel. Bob, a very good evening to you. You made it clear last time that right now the solar panel is not fully deployed and they were working on it, though there was power in the rest of the spacecraft. What is the update? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, Lucy is a probe to go to the Trojan asteroids that orbit in Jupiter's orbit. And it's going to visit about 8 asteroids. That's its plan. And so that's farther out in the solar system, which means it has need for more power. So in order to get more power, they weren't going to use nuclear power, a nuclear RPG source, the kind of thing Curiosity uses. They decided to go to solar panels, but they need to be bigger solar panels. So rather than do the standard rectangular panels, they decided to do this. Think of a Chinese fan that you open up around, and it opens up into a circular form. And so one of the panels deployed, but the other one did not open all the way and then lock. And I got a good graphic on Behind the Black to give you an idea of what this looks like. And so they've been looking at this to try to figure out, one, how far has it deployed? Can they gamble with deploying it, trying to deploy it again? What's the problem? They're trying to pin everything down. They've spent a lot of time. Lucy is on its cruise mode on the way out there, and it apparently is they're not under a super clock to get this fixed, so they're taking their time about it. They had an update this week in which they outlined all the things they have done so far. They have tested batteries and how much they're charging. They've tested how much power the arrays are making, even in their present configuration. Most important of all, though, is they call them gores. They're 10 gores, and each gore is actually the equivalent to one of the sections of a fan. Think of a fan opening up, and it's like an accordion, and each accordion section is called a gore, and there are 10 of them. And what they've determined is that all are open and producing power. They're not, no one gore or fan section is stuck together. So that means what happened is when this thing unrolled like a fan, it just simply didn't unroll all the way, reach its end, and then lock together. And so now what they're assessing is to decide whether or not they can try a deployment again. And that's where we stand. They're being very cautious and slow about this. And they're a little vague, too, as well. But I suspect they're going to, at some point, attempt to turn the deployment mechanisms on again and try to get the thing to come and latch into place. And keep your fingers crossed. It also does appear, since all the gores or fans are open, it's probably producing a high percentage of the power it was supposed to, which means they might be able to get away with it as it is for most of the mission, John.
It feels, Bob, as if the solution is one that I use all the time with all these electronics. When nothing works, I turn it off and turn it back on again. That's what I get.
Well, it's not quite that, because what they have to do is the mechanism that opens the fan stopped working before it locked, and they're going to have to see if they can turn that back on and run it. It's not like power cycling. It's going to be complicated. Meanwhile, NASA, let's talk about software. NASA has issued an upgrade to the software that it uses to monitor, track, and predict the future orbits of potentially dangerous asteroids. The software, the original software called Sentry, is very effective at calculating the orbits based on the initial data picked up by photography. But asteroids are affected by more than just gravity because they're so small. For example, sunlight heating an asteroid unevenly on its surface, you know, dark and light areas, that different impact of the light can actually affect its orbit. And so that's an example of several of the factors, the more random factors that weren't in the old software. Well, NASA has now included it in the new software. So what this means is they spot or find new asteroids, the software can morph quickly, automatically, give us a much better sense of its possibility of impact over the next century or so. And that is very important. It reduces the amount of manual calculations that are needed, John.
This is a crossword puzzler, what it's called, the Yarkovsky effect. And Bob, the reason I learned that long ago is because there's an enormous number of asteroids under 140 meters, I think. I think it's 140 meters that we haven't found. And they, and we continue to look for them. So I didn't know that NASA wasn't tracking the Yarkovsky effect. That means we've been guesstimating a deal for quite some time.
Well, the thing is, John, it's not so much that they're not calculating it, but when they do the initial calculations with the old software, it would tell them whether an asteroid was potentially dangerous. And if that was the case, then scientists would have to manually add these other effects, like the Yarkovsky effect. Now the software is going to do that automatically, which just means we'll have the information sooner and more and quicker, and that's the important thing.
All right, definition. What is a peer-reviewed journal?
Peer-reviewed journals are what most science journals are, and the idea behind it is to prevent bad science. What happens is you submit your paper to a peer-reviewed panel, often anonymous panel, and it's double-blind sometimes, so they don't even know who the author of the paper they're reviewing is. And these are scientists in the field, and they look at the paper and they decide whether it's got problems, correct them, and it's supposed to prevent bad science. But over the last two decades, repeatedly, scientists have been able to get obviously hoax papers published, and almost routinely this is not in the hard sciences, this is in the social sciences, often within the gender and the political, social department, peer-reviewed journals. So this past week, another obvious hoax paper was published by Higher Education Quarterly. The peer reviewers failed to perform due diligence on the paper. They neglected, for example, noting that the authors were clearly fake. They were not at UCLA professors as claimed. They also claimed they had data from various foundations that do not exist, or one that went out of business in 2005, and the peer-reviewing people didn't catch it. So this is just indicating that, especially in the social sciences, peer-review publications are not to be trusted. They're not doing good work to make sure the science is good, and we see this repeated, John, over and over and over again. So from a journalist perspective, it's important to be aware of it, and from the public's perspective, it's important to be aware of it, because anything coming out of the social sciences is not trustworthy.
Ingenuity, the magic of the flying toaster. Where is it, Bob?
Well, okay, so I have a post on Behind the Black where ingenuity and perseverance presently sit in Jezero Crater. So this is not just about ingenuity. Perseverance has been very, 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 very slowly retreating out of the rough dune area called Sete, and I mean really slowly retreating. Ingenuity did its 17th flight. Ironically, when they planned the flight, they expected Perseverance to be sitting at a specific spot. Unfortunately, it did move slightly because every day gets changed and they can't always predict. So when Ingenuity did its 17th flight, it appears everything went well, but as the helicopter was landing, the terrain between it and Perseverance, there was a outcrop that actually blocked communications. And so as the helicopter landed, it lost communications with Perseverance, could not catch the data coming from Ingenuity. It apparently landed fine, no problems, but this puts them in a situation where they're probably not going to fly Ingenuity until Perseverance finally comes around to a much closer location so that communications will not be lost.
So it's line of sight communication. That's what was lost. And
that's correct. Exactly right, Joe.
And this is the first time, to my memory, you've reported on such a thing. Did they know this
That's
was
correct.
Possible? Or is this a surprise?
Oh, yes. They've always been aware this was possible. And as they're, you know, as they're pushing this helicopter far beyond its original nominal flight, they expect these kind of things to happen more. And it's actually part of the engineering. See if it can manage out of communications for a period of time. And this is actually, even though it wasn't expected to happen as initially planned, it's actually a good thing it did happen, because they now get some more data on how the thing operates and how to make it work better.
All right, we leave the new guys, Perseverance and Ingenuity, and go to the old standby, Curiosity. What are we looking at, Bob?
All right, I have posted a mosaic of two different navigation images on Curiosity. Curiosity, as I mentioned in a previous report, has now moved into the mountains. It's now entered Maria Gordon Notch, which is the gap in the mountains in Gale Crater. That's about 40 feet wide, not very wide. It's got a 40-foot cliff on one side, and it's got a 30 to 60 foot cliff on the other side. So this is almost like going through a slot canyon. And so the rover is now in the Slot Canyon. And so they had great navigation images that came up today. And so I posted it on Behind the Black. And it's what it is. It's looking up at the western cliff, the 40-foot cliff, the top of that cliff, so you can see the layers and the interesting geology formations. This is an Earth. There's one of the features in this picture that's really cool is there's a pond of dust and sand near the bottom in a hollow, but it's almost vertical. On Earth, dust could not remain in that position, but on Mars, with a 39% gravity, it can. And so that's one of the things that's really interesting about this image. And it's just cool stuff. We're looking at real big, spectacular geology with Curiosity these days, and that's a lot of fun.
We go from thus the rovers on Mars to look from orbit to glacial flows. Where on Mars, Bob?
All right, well, this is a Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter picture. It's a terrain sample, which means it was just taken to maintain the temperature of the camera, and they just picked a random spot. Not entirely random, but they don't know what they're going to get, and it's not related to any scientific research. And the result is this incredibly spectacular image of an erosion glacial flow, an eroding glacial flow, multiple moraines, it looks like, coming off the central peak of a 40-mile wide unnamed crater. And this crater is in what I call glacial country on Mars. It's the mid-latitude 2,000-mile-long strip near the northern lowland plains where almost every image will show glacial fresh material. This picture, though, is even more spectacular because it appears that over time the glacial flows come down off the central peak less and less and less, and it's been retreating over time, and it just creates this incredible image, Sean. It's just amazing.
Bob, how tall is that cliff? Did you say how?
No, I don't say, and I don't have the. I actually don't have the numbers, so I can't. Which cliff? You mean the cliff that Curiosity?
Yeah, took? Curiosity.
Yeah, Curiosity. That cliff is 40 feet high, and we're probably looking at the top 25 feet in that Curiosity image.
It's very cool, Bob. Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. Examine Mars, and consider that we're headed there. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.